our tax counsel, investors tax counsel, and our financial consultant that we should bifurcate this loan into two separate notes, one of which is recourse to Ramp Housing, Inc. on behalf of the partnership in an amount of $2 million, and the balance of the loan, which is $13 million, will be unsecured non-recourse debt as well. So again, you know, this has a modest impact on what it actually means in a foreclosure scenario. However, because the housing authority is holding the note on behalf of one of its affiliates, we have ultimate control on both sides of the ball as to whether or not, you know, we choose to foreclose on this loan, and the overall risk profile of the deal is not substantially impacted. Finally, we have been asked by our permanent lender, which is Prudential Affordable Mortgage Corporation, on behalf of Freddie Mac, to change the name of the permanent lender. We had one Prudential affiliate originally slated in our rezos. At the 11th hour, they came to us and told us, no, in fact, it is another entity that needs to be included there. So we've made that change as a cleanup here. No impact to the deal whatsoever. With all that in mind, I would love to entertain questions. I'm sure the complexity and breadth of this resolution probably has a few, so feel free to let me know if any questions have come up. Excuse me.
Thank you for the explanations. I see that the appraisal is at $50 million,
that's correct,
but the total loan amounts are $63 million. So is that right, or?
Yes, so the construction loan amount, the tax-exempt bond construction loan amount is $63.8 million. That's not tied to the appraised value of the property. So we've got three separate loans that basically equal the $50 million appraised value. We've got a seller carryback loan in the amount of $34,400,000. The Housing Authority construction permanent loan in the amount of $15 million, and there's a ground lease loan in the amount of $599,901. The other $99 in the transaction is cash that will be contributed by the partnership back to the Housing Authority at closing as sort of a nominal capitalized ground lease payment.
Okay, so there's no issue about the construction loan being higher than the appraised value?
No, and in fact, in most deals like this, you know, typically the construction loan will exceed the value of the property. You can think first about a new construction deal where the property is simply the value of the land. So for the entirety of the construction loan, you know, you'll have debt in excess of value. For acquisition rehab deals, it's also not uncommon, and that is one of the reasons why U.S. Bank has required an extensive guarantee be issued by both Ramp Housing, Inc. and the Housing Authority, simply because they know the property does not have the value to retire the loan.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Didn't have my mic on. How confident are we right now that we have a good understanding of what the environmental risk would be, and there won't be any, let's say, significant surprises as we move forward? So I'm really just kind of testing. I'm just asking a confirmation of the comfort level here with the call. I mean, at first we were really upset about. I was upset about the high cost of this, until I got a text message that it cost $1,000 a square foot to build a house in Rockridge. And I'm like, holy moly, maybe I was a little low on my estimates.
Yeah, happy to address all of those concerns. So with respect to construction costs, everybody in the industry agrees that they're grotesquely out of control, and nobody is happy about it. In fact, it causes us certain problems because we have limitations on how much we can spend with respect to our public funding sources that are becoming more and more difficult to hit every day as construction costs go up. We've anecdotally heard that construction costs go up 1% a month year over year, and that's been the case for quite some time. It's been borne out in this project where our scope of work has not materially changed, but our original cost estimate perhaps a year ago is gone up. I can't do the math in my head, but it's gone up about 20%, you know, since we first started pre-development activities on this back in 2018. Some of that's related to the environmental cost, but mostly it's just cost escalation. And every day we wait, the cost gets higher, you know. So for one, I'm eager to start the project simply so that we can stop the escalator and simply have a construction contract in hand where we know absolutely what we're going to have to pay to fix this thing. With respect to doing new construction, it was certainly an option. And, you know, I think when we first started exploring doing a rehab on this deal, we had an internal cost estimate of $16 million. That was what we budgeted for this back in, 2016 or 2017. It predated my arrival here. Once we enlisted a contractor and had them actually take a look at our scope of work, that estimate ballooned by more than a factor of two. It was in the mid-30s, I think, in their original estimate. And that precipitated us having to look towards not self-funding this deal, but going out doing a tax credit syndication and accepting all that that means. We could have torn it down at that point, and there was an argument to be made in that favor. However, you know, that presents its own set of complications. So even if we wanted to build back one unit for each unit that we tore down, right now our total cost of development are roughly $460,000 a unit once you take out the related party, you know, value of the land and building that's being donated. To get apples to apples with new construction. Mm-hmm. So new construction in the Bay Area right now for affordable housing, you know, it varies depending on what you're doing and where you are, but, you know, we're hearing $750,000 a unit. So building back, you know, new costs roughly twice as much as rehabbing, even at kind of the comically high prices that we presented to you, unfortunately. Beyond that, you know, once we charted our path and we started doing significant work and pre-development and we've expended quite a bit of money, you know, you never want sunk costs to rule your decision-making entirely, but we're approximately $3 million in at this point. And if we changed course and we went to another direction to do new construction, of course, we would lose that $3 million and have to start over with. Finally, because the cost of building new is so high, we would have to go and compete for competitively allocated sources of funding, either from the city of Oakland, who frankly does not have the money to spend on this project, or the state of California through the various programs administered by HCD. And, you know, we are not in a position to compete for those funds. So we made the call that it would be, you know, the right move to continue on the course of rehabilitating the property.
Right, I see. So what you're really saying is if we went another path right now, that would add considerable risk in addition to expense.
Correct.
So you'd spend more and add risk.
That's correct.
And delay time. I'm going to jump in a little bit, Chair. I think delay of the time and then the awareness of the environmental issues that are at the property do not go away. And could you explain a little bit about what we'd still be obligated to?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry, I was not trying to dodge that. I just got
so deep into my own comment. I understand that the environmental issues represent a constant.
Right, that's right.
You rip it down, whatever you do, they're there.
Yeah. Right. So we feel pretty comfortable where we're at on the environmental closure process. You know, we've worked extensively with the Alameda County Department of Environmental Health to establish a protocol and a plan to successfully address and close out the environmental issues at the site. It's our expectation that once we get this project done with, we will have installed a vapor mitigation system. We will have removed and or capped lead soil at the site and dealt with some groundwater issues as well to the extent that's necessary to get environmental closure and certainly to the extent that's necessary to protect our residents. To that point, you know, the current environmental conditions have been proven or have been tested and the levels have been borne out to not represent any immediate risk to our residents. That was always our first concern. That was always the first thing we looked at. Indoor air quality is fine. The groundwater doesn't pose a significant issue. The soil does not pose one either because it's mostly encapsulated under concrete and hardscape. But nonetheless, we've got a path to doing environmental mitigation that will allow us to close this case in approximately 2 years. We should have about 6 to 8 months between the time the environmental work gets done and our deadline to convert to permanent financing under our original timeline and our original budget. We have a 6-month extension, and there's no reason based on the county's known process why it would take any longer than a year to close that out. In that respect, we feel like we've budgeted to fix the problem. The fix has been identified and approved by the county in official documents, and we know the path going forward. So we're pretty confident that we'll get it done and that there will be no additional impact from those issues.
Thank you, David. And, Chair, I'd like to add that one of the two attorneys that have been assisting on this project is sitting next to me. And so I just wanted to ask Ms. Brewer if there's anything she would complement David's explanation with that might be of helpful to our board.
Good evening, Commissioners. Is this on? I think it's on. Yeah. I'd be happy to entertain any questions. I don't have any independent information to give, but please let me know if I can answer any questions.
Well, I think overall you're satisfied with where we are, right, and the path that we're on. I think that's really the question. We can't really know everything about this project. We're just here to do the best job we can asking questions and to try to manage the risk and, you know, just confirm that the decision is on the right path. And I think Dave's done a really fine job, I mean, at least to answering my questions and
Yes, I was thinking about this actually on the way over here, and is it on, or should I talk into it more closely? Through this process of, I don't know, maybe it's been 6 months of the environmental issues being investigated and looked at by all the financing team, they have become comfortable that there is very little risk here, or they actually wouldn't go forward.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's actually a great comfort that they're now willing to go forward. We're in closing mode. We're working around the clock, and we are planning to sign tomorrow and close Thursday. So Everyone now has gotten pretty comfortable, including Freddie Mac, who's notoriously conservative.
Thank you, Ms. Brewer. And I should mention that in the past 6 weeks, 8 weeks, Ms. Brewer and Mr. Gadu and Ms. Galka have spent a lot of time educating your executive director, and I've asked every question, including one that I can't say at the microphone, but Michelle usually says, no, Patricia, that's not going to happen, and then we're okay. So as long as that doesn't happen, we're good.
No, because we talked today, and this is all, everything is now really sorted out. I mean, I feel very good about this, and I want to compliment you on the comprehensiveness of your evaluation of the project.
Great. Thank you very much.
So thank you.
Thank you. I got the team together as soon as we got off the phone, so I wanted to make sure that
everyone
was comfortable.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
Thank
We're
you.
We're good. We're all fine.
This is an action item.
Any questions? No. Well, we're ready for a motion.
Well, I'll make a motion to approve the resolution.
Okay. Second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Look at that. Unanimous.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Green. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And now we are moving forward to item C, recognition of people wishing to address the commission. I have no speaker cards.
There are none, Chair.
There are none. No one is out there waving their arms. So now we are on to written communications.
Thank you. In written communications, you have our monthly report for October 2019. Mm-hmm. The November report will be part of your packet for the January meeting, as has been traditional for us. There are highlights for several accomplishments not just in resident self-sufficiency, but also at the property level and partnerships between OPO, leased housing, and FCP to inspire an increase in leasing before year's end. And they are making plans for opening up wait lists as needed for both the public housing sites as well as the OPI sites, which are one of the affiliates underneath the Housing Authority. I should also add, in addition to your report this year, is we have the Capital Improvements Department now added to the monthly report, and so you'll be receiving highlights on their major projects as well as hiring and inspection activities for CID. So I thought that would be helpful so that you would know each part of the operation and program, and we can add that to the communications. And that concludes my written reports.
Director, will you be speaking about the Maxine Waters letter next?
Thank you. I should have said that included the monthly report. Under written communications, which is a separate line item,
I apologize.
I wanted to make
sure. No, wait, that was written communications, and now we're on executive director's report. Am I on the right order
it's,
here?
It's behind it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The CAHI board, the California Affordable Housing Initiatives, is one of the nonprofit affiliates associated with the Housing Authority. And as requested, we'll be providing more updates on our nonprofit boards at this meeting so that everyone can stay up to date to what's happening. One of the recent, very quick 72-hour turnarounds that we had to do under the CAHI umbrella was respond to a proposed change to legislation that was put out on a Thursday evening for a Financial Services Committee meeting on a Tuesday. And so the CAHI team, myself, Andreas, and Leanne Farner got together with our general counsel across the nation and crafted the letter that you see here and got it in literally at 1 o'clock in the morning of the committee meeting and got it before all the primary committee staff. So it was one of those Herculean efforts. Mm-hmm. What's really interesting about this is that while we were crafting and finalizing the letter, the other industry groups were just finding out about this particular situation. So it was definitely trying to get in there at the last minute. And yes, I did say that at the mic for anybody listening. What this particular letter outlines, which has been described by representatives of the industry groups as being very direct, open, and forthtelling, is that the attempt, what we believe to be an attempt to regulatorily restrict housing authorities from being able to continue the PVCA contract administration, actually was not just going to perhaps do that, but also attack the very Section 8 ACC programs for housing authorities. And so I wanted to make sure that you had a chance to read the letter. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to talk about it with you. We can have Leanne Farner, our director of CAHI, attend and give a presentation if that's of interest, just to help educate the board on what's happening with our different nonprofit affiliates. So that's why this is included in this packet, to let you know that it's public housing, it's the Section 8 program, and it's also our PVCA that we're constantly making sure that we stay on top of and protect. And CAHI is one of two administrators in the state of California. The other is LOMOD, which is a nonprofit affiliate of the Housing Authority of the City of LA. They also provided comments, although I did get a nice email from their executive director on the depth of our, so that was kind of cool that we came out on top on that one. And I want to thank the team for their work over that weekend, because it was pretty challenging. And that should have also, I should have also included Michelle Hassan as part of that team. Behind that is a report. It again is a transparency information item. It's on the my reconciliation of the Deputy Executive Director campaign travel for the NARO elections for the 2019-2021 election period. It it highlights the fact that as a campaign candidate, I was able to do campaign solicitation over and above the commitment that this board gave to support my campaign, and I successfully received funds from several entities, including the Pacific Southwest Regional Council and the California Association of Housing Authorities. They both groups endorsed me. I successfully was appointed and elected, uncontested admittedly, but to Senior Vice President of NARL National and began that term in October. And ultimately, the funds contributed by the Housing Authority after a reduction of the campaign contributions was just short of $2,400. So we got in good, and there's a list of my travel. And as I get more clear on travel for the upcoming year, I'll let you know that so you know what the commitment is to NARO in this position. And I should also mention, I will also add that travel for all Housing Authority staff, the registration fees are reduced, and the registration fees for the chair are gratuitous since you now have the senior VP as the NARL campaign person. So that's just behind there. And there's also an article of the appointment of myself with the current president. Behind that, I'm sorry, were there any questions?
Congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Behind that is the commission meeting schedule calendar for 2019 to 2020. And that may change as needed, but right now these are all the meeting dates that we can plan on for the upcoming year. And then behind there are commissioner travel opportunities in 2020. And in January, we will do the typical annual memo, making sure that the board has an ability to travel and attend conferences and trainings as necessary. In follow-up to our last meeting, there was a request from Commissioner Castillo on the average median income for OHA families. This information was compiled for us by our PIC department, Dominica Henderson and Julie Christensen. I want to say thank you. And it gives you an idea of the number of families that fall into the three tiers of below 30%, 49% to 80% of the area median income, and 80% to 50% of the area median income. And as you can see, the majority of our families in the MTW household portfolio, specifically 10,196, fall below 30% of our area median income. So when we reflect upon that knowledge, it really gives tremendous highlight to some of the numbers that you see in our monthly report, the achievements of getting residents engaged by our Family Community Partnerships Department, who are assisted by our Police Department and our Property Operations Department with referrals. It gives rise to the challenges when you look at the lease enforcement information provided by our property operations team, and also gives an understanding to some of the rent payment trends that are happening in our tenant account receivables. And in fact, today in our OB board meeting, one of the questions raised by Director Griffith was, while 30% is the benchmark of how a tenant's portion of the rent is paid is standard, that 70% that they have to pay for everything else beyond rent is conditioned upon the fact that what it costs to be a human being in the city of Oakland does not stay stable. And so groceries, gas, transportation costs, the cost of preparing your child to go to school, the cost of working does fluctuate. And so that 70% is relative when you look at the amount of income under 30% of the AMI. And I believe 30% of the AMI is, I'm looking at Dominica, the actual dollar amount of 30%. It's about $30,000. And we're talking about a typical family of four for these numbers.
Oh, wow.
And so it was a very good question, and it's actually helped us to start thinking about relooking at our MTW initiatives, trying to look at where we are putting the level of effort, its impact on families, and perhaps having some discussions about shifting some of our attention where it would have the most impact to stabilize the success of families, not just to say tenants, but also to thrive and not just exist in the city of Oakland and in the properties we provide. And so that's a follow-up to your question at the last meeting.
You.
And that concludes my report. Thank you.
You're Very good.
I have a couple of comments.
Yes, definitely.
I want to thank you for this piece of information because this is what I need to advocate adequately for the Housing Authority. As you know, if these 80,000 folks that are below 20% AMI, they could not live here without us. They would be scattered wherever they could find housing or on the street. So this is the significant impact that we have in the city of Oakland that prevents homelessness, that allows people to live where they want to and live quality of life. So this is a significant piece of information. To have 10,000 of our people that are below 30% AMI, it's significant information that I'm going to share at other tables that I sit on, particularly when we are often called upon to answer and be the solution to homelessness, when what we really are is prevention, first and foremost. And also, definitely they can come to us for expertise and whatever we can do, but they need to keep us viable and stable because this is the truth that I needed to share. So I really, really appreciate it. Thank you. I also wanted to really call attention to a line in the letter, Director, that says, if this passes, this statute of change that says OHA would no longer have a role in Oakland's housing choice program. I just wanted to provide emphasis on that, and maybe you could tell me a little bit about why that would be if this passes. And also, what else happened other than we submitted this letter? Did other housing authorities across the nation put more pressure on the federal government to get educated on this and to stop this?
Thank you. The communications we received back from both committee staff as well as this, as you saw, this went to not just the Congresswoman who's chair, but also our own Congresswoman Barbara Lee. Okay. And her staff actually thanked us for alerting them.
Good.
Because not everyone was aware that this was pending. As I said, the industry groups FADA, NARA, and CLAFA all gave comments to the concern, although most of the membership of housing authorities, and there are, I believe, 18 only in the nation that are PPCA, responded. NARA also took note. And the reason why that line is in there is because they were making changes to the actual legislation in the regs that they thought would attach itself just to the PPCA. However, unknowingly, it was actually language authorizing the housing choice voucher program itself. Mm-hmm. And so what we were told is that this was just a draft. It was a discussion draft. Mm. And that stay tuned, there'll be further discussion. So we have heard nothing since, and our hope is that they went back and realized that perhaps they were attempting to do something they didn't mean to do, and that we'll be invited to the table
yes.
as being a participant for those discussions. And so I think the fact that we successfully got it before the committee, as well as the two Congress members' staff, Congresswoman mm-hmm. Waters, as well as Congresswoman Lee, that we would be someone they'd reach out to for further information. Well, and that's the whole goal.
Well done. I mean, you said you stayed up for late. Yeah.
I wasn't alone. It was a team effort.
The team effort. No, yeah. Well done. This is the kind of work that we need to do. So thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. If I may indulge a little bit more, it's the end of the year, and in addition to crafting a end of year closeout newsletter, which the team led by Greg McVeigh is working on, we get to celebrate the fact that last Wednesday night, we celebrated the annual 39th Holiday Splendor.
Oh,
and we were joined by Commissioners Lee, Commissioner Wright, as well as Commissioner Montgomery. There might have been some dancing involved, folks that are up here at the front. And I just want to give a thank you to our police department, Family Community Services, and staff from all the departments for volunteering thousands of smiles, many, many comments from our residents on what that means to them, because for some it's the one chance to celebrate during the holidays, and it's a tradition that it starts off the holiday for us. But it just starts it off, because I wanted to do on behalf of Chief, and I hope it's okay, in the police department, Chief is having his, do you want to do the invite? Okay. Chief is having his annual police department open house, where he celebrates all of his staff and their families, and has invited each member of the board. Mm. It's this Wednesday at 6 p.m.
And what time?
This Wednesday at 6 p.m. And basically the police department has rooms full of different buffet from all over the world, of different cultural venues, and it's a time to be able to speak with the officers, their family members, and see what the staff is all about. And then lastly, on the 18th, the Housing Authority found 1180 25th Avenue at the police department for OHA, and I'll send out an email tomorrow to verify the address.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. At the headquarters. And I think that the officers would be delighted to see some of the commissioners there and participate and fellowship with their staff.
How long is it going to run?
Till 8
p.m. 8
p.m.
Perfect.
Yeah. I'm sharing my Christmas playlist, so it'll be great music.
All right.
And then on the 18th, the Housing Authority Foundation and staff are hosting our annual toy drive, where we're gearing up to give away Christmas cheer and presents to over 800 children who families receive subsidy under our public housing project based Section 8 and Section 8 programs. And that's really more something just come by and be inspired to see the number of families that we touch. And it's an amazing event. It begins from 3 to 7. And so it's another opportunity to just not have to make a decision or do anything other than enjoy the work that you do by seeing the smiles on the faces of the children and the families that we serve. And that is my concluded report.
Well, good. Thank you. Now, I just had one question on the memo that Commissioner Castillo was talking about there. What's a time frame estimate on this issue, when we might really run into trouble with a decision? I mean, how?
I look back at the staff and smile, because the response that this is a discussion and it's just the beginning of it, and stay tuned.
So there's no way to know. It could be absolutely anything.
Sure. We do know that the PCA contracts have been extended for 18 months, so the anticipation is that the procurement will be coming out somewhere in the next 12. And so arguably we can anticipate some sort of follow-up commentary at any point between now and this time next year.
You know, this also got me to wondering if it might not be a good idea to incorporate a very quick, short presentation of some sort for these important subsidiaries like CAHI and OPI to the entire board, so that people kind of understand, so we all understand what the key issues are, especially since OPI is a significant generator of resources for the business, and CAHI also because of the type of resources CAHI has.
Thank you. That's been part of the ongoing discussion. Yeah. We had talked about it being at a retreat, and we haven't gotten any further on when that would be. But
actually,
Goldfarb and Lippman already put together some papers for us in September to update us on that. So we're happy to do that.
Great. Okay, we're all good? Great. Wow, look at this. We're going to make it, maybe. Okay, now we have reports of commission committees. We met.
We did?
Yeah. We actually met. So would you like to give or do you want me to give
So the transition committee met, and
it's
We are on a roll. We had some really great ideas on really solidifying the mission and the values of this agency. We are, of course, looking to make sure that it's inclusive and that we are actually considering what we all want, the bigger we, and also how to really support our new executive director in any way that we possibly can. So I need to look at a document that I haven't seen, and then I'll pass it on to the transition committee, and then we'll go from there. And yes, we're thinking of doing at least two retreats in the coming year for the board and seeing what else we can come up with. So we're very happy to be able to do this as part of the transition team. We are also meeting this month as a second meeting.
We are meeting this month, second meeting. And we are getting a package with some goals from Patricia, so we're getting
it's
the.
It's my fault.
No, it's okay. We're getting the thing. It's rolling. It's rolling. There's actual progress here. We're actually meeting and trying to do stuff. I think that was it, huh? No, we did not meet the police. The community. That's not. We're calling it the community safety and security. Committee.
Sounds good.
As opposed to the police committee. Yes. So, we haven't met. We're in the process of scheduling the meeting, and that's been going on for a couple of weeks. And this is literally getting these committees together is equivalent to that trite old saying of herding cats. It's very, very difficult because people's schedules are all very, very different. So we're doing the best we can, but we will be meeting. So we will get all of this done. So if that's all we have for committees, I believe, then we're on to announcements by commissioners.
Did we do the people?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. There wasn't anybody here.
Yeah
we're good. So do we have any announcements?
None.
Wow. You know what that means? We adjourn to closed session. Hey. Yeah, we're done. We're adjourned. We have, okay. Yeah,
we're. Barbara
will second. Yeah, that sounds good.
Thank you.
And we're all in.
Going so fast.